Hey, welcome into the Hot Read Podcast for Monday, April the 29th. I'm your host, Easton Freeze, director of published content here at BroadwaySportsMedia.com. We're also brought to you by the 440 Podcast Network. You can follow me on social media at Easton Freeze. We've got a little compilation video for you from the draft weekend that was. Producer JT and I decided to take our usual Sunday evening recording off because we were exhausted from having spent almost 17 hours in front of a camera on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, reacting to and analyzing the Tennessee Titans draft in real time. Now, if you missed it or you didn't catch all of it, you don't want to go back through 17 hours of footage to hear what we had to say. So I did it for you. You're welcome. I've compiled about an hour 45 of the best reaction and analysis to all seven of the Titans picks, breaking down the first two rounds, just JT and I from Thursday and Friday, reacting to the draft of J.C. Latham and Devondre Sweat, and then a compilation of all five of the picks the Titans made on day three, where JT and I were joined by Zach Lyons and Stoney Keeley, friends of the show here on the 440 Podcast Network. And we recap the first two picks the Titans made at the top of that portion, and then we dive into reacting to Jarvis Brownlee Jr., and Cedric Gray and Jaquan Jackson and all the guys they went and got on day three. So hopefully you enjoyed this episode. It is the most raw, unfiltered version of our analysis. And then JT and I will be back regularly scheduled Tuesday afternoon around 4:30 Central Standard Time tomorrow to break down in detail our thoughts in the aftermath of this Titans draft. So until then, enjoy this compilation and we'll talk to you on Tuesday.
They are unshackled for the rest of the draft. They can go in any direction they want. Whatever they do, they've got their premier tackle need locked down. And that is a big, big deal. Welcome into the Hot Read Draft Show. 4 hours of commercial-free draft coverage focused on the Tennessee Titans. Coming at you starting now. I'm your host, Easton Freeze, director of published content here at BroadwaySportsMedia.com. We're also brought to you by the 440 Podcast Network, and you can follow me on social media at Easton Freeze. I am sitting next to producer JT, who is with me as always, who you can follow on social media at JT_Runke. JT, we're here.
I know. It all started way back in January when we were at the Senior Bowl, and we are finally here. And you're probably wondering why, JT, you sound very different. And it's because I've had to fight everything to be here. Finally,
you have
over my third sickness in like the last month.
One eye, one lung. All right, Titans pick it. Okay, so yeah, they are not going to trade down here. Titans were fielding offers, but they're going to stick at seven. In my gut, it's J.C. Latham. I feel like it has been J.C. Latham.
I want it to be Olu because I was right on the Jim Wyatt mailbag today.
That's true. That's true.
Right now, the pick is in. As far as I know,
I'm going to be very pleased if it's Olu Fashanu. I'm going to be very pleased if it's J.C. Latham. I think they are both. I'll tell you this right now. They are both tackles that in most other draft classes would be tackle one with the bullet. They both have incredible, very different profiles, very different styles of player. And I think who they pick is going to give us a little bit of an insight into the kind of offense and offensive line they want. Love that. So Titans have taken J.C. Latham, tackle out of Alabama. Has felt like Bill Callahan's hand-picked guy for a couple of weeks now, a couple months now. That's why I've been talking up his that's why I've been not talking him up, just trying to pump up the prospect, but get people to understand this guy's fantastic. This guy's the strongest player in the entire class. He is a mountain of a man. He is going to be fantastic at either right or left tackle for the Tennessee Titans. I've already seen folks on Twitter in my mentions saying Titans still have a huge need at left tackle. There was a left tackle right there on the board at with Olu Fashanu. Guys, a couple of things. One, if you think the Titans really agreed with you on the fact that they desperately need left tackle more than they need right tackle, and they don't think J.C. Latham has positional versatility, why would they have left Olu Fashanu on the board there and taken Latham? They wouldn't have, which means either one, they disagree with you on the idea that left tackle in the modern NFL is this much more important than right tackle, because they're right. It's not. Most premier edge rushers in the league line up over the right side. Both tackle positions are basically equivalent in value. They are paid basically exactly the same at the top of the market. They both matter, and the Titans don't have one at either. That being said, the Titans may also disagree with you with the idea that he can't play on the left side. It's been at least a month we've been saying.
JC Latham
can play both sides of the ball. I'm not saying that they're going to move him to left. I'm not going to be surprised either way. It's probably going to end up being one of those things where, like, we're going to try him, we're going to see, we'll figure it out, and by the end of camp, we'll have an answer. I doubt they immediately tell us where he's going to play. But, and he's trying to break Roger Goodell on the screen right now. I'd be terrified as Roger right now. I don't see him as a prospect incapable of having versatility to move to the left side. He played left tackle all through high school, came into Alabama, and the only reason why he did not play left tackle for them was because Evan Neal, a player that was already a couple seasons into his college career, drafted a couple of years ago, also in the top 10 at least.
He was the number 4
to the Giants, I think 4 or 5 to the Giants, was already at the left tackle position. So he switched to right. He is the biggest of the six. Well, is he bigger than Marius Mims?
I think Mims, it's close.
Okay, so he is both him, of them and, him and Mims are the biggest tackles of the top 6 guys. Off the top of my head, I can't tell exactly who's bigger. They are both huge. He's definitely the heaviest of the top tackles, but he moves on tape like a man that is 50 pounds lighter than he is. He's got really fantastic footwork. Again, like I said, he's the strongest player in the class. I think he's exactly what the Titans need. I'll tell you this right now. Will Levis is doing backflips right now. The idea that this guy is going to be protecting him on one side of the line is a huge, huge deal. Yeah, send it to me. Send it to me and I will. I got it. I love this pick for Tennessee. I don't love it as much as a trade down. I really don't. And I think all eyes are now on the Titans trading down from 38 and getting some day two capital somehow in that way. But right now, I think the Titans should be pleased. And what did we talk about going into this? If they don't take a tackle in the first round, we're going to spend the rest of the night worrying, wondering about the tackles coming off of the board precipitously. That's not the case. The Titans, they are unshackled for the rest of the draft. They can go in any direction they want, whether they stick at 38, whether they trade back, whatever they do, they've got their premier tackle need locked down. And that is a big, big deal.
Yeah, so let's go through a couple of comments because we have a wide range of emotions here. Jordan saying he's not mad at all. Marcus saying another panda.
No.
Ian says should have taken Odunze. Logan says he's only a right tackle. The data shows that guys don't flip well. Derek says first round right tackle gives me PTSD. Jay Tool says I'm so pissed right now. I'm sick to my stomach. Paul says, this is the biggest thing. If Bill Callahan wants JC Latham, he's good with it. And I think that if Bill Callahan, if they make this move, they don't make this move without Bill Callahan giving his blessing to make this move.
He was working one-on-one extensively with Latham. They had him in for a visit. They had a lot of his Alabama teammates that are first-round caliber players. They're going to go off the board here in a minute. Also in for a visit to get a 360 view of who JC Latham is as a person. I'm sure he fits the culture, or at least they think that he does, because they did a lot of work on him. The Falcons taking Mike. Okay, so we promised craziness. Here's our craziness. Michael Pettine. Let us know in the chat, by the way.
And I do want to say real quick.
Yeah.
Colby says, wow, y'all are about to have your mind blown.
Yeah, no kidding.
This is our mind blown.
So, J.J. McCarthy, not the fourth quarterback off the board.
This is Levis all over
again. Michael Penix going let's see if he gets out of the – I doubt he gets out of the first round, but we will see. Wow, to Michael Penix going as high as he did.
Okay, so we're fully back.
We're back.
So let's come back to the JC Latham conversation real quick. And there's some things I do that some people have in the comments here pointed out that I think are really interesting and worth mentioning. When you talk about just the prospect himself, JC Latham, and Wyatt saying, boy is barely 21. I think that's huge. He's one of the younger tackles in this class. I think that's something that you have to hang your hat on.
Yes.
The measurables on him, like we said.
Unimpeachable.
On 90th percentile arms. I believe they're around 35-inch arms. We talked about this.
It's the weight and the movement. That's the only question.
Right.
He doesn't have an injury history of significance.
We talked about this all cycle. Even if the Titans draft a left tackle, they still need to find an option.
They didn't have a right tackle at either side.
So now... They have the right tackle. You have a right tackle for the next 7-8 years.
Mm-hmm.
Now you got to figure out the left side. And mm-hmm. I understand that to some, that is like gospel. What?
Does this team view Peter Skoronski as a left tackle? Hear me out. Could this be Easton Freeze's 1 year redemption arc? Could this be the moment? And again, if I had to guess right now, they move him to left tackle. I really do think so. But if they view Peter Skoronski as a left tackle, and they think they now have their bookend tackles, and the interior is where they are curious to add some guys, which they can do on day three, some starter caliber players, it would change the way that we see this Titans team, and it would, more importantly, make me the most annoying person on the entire face of the planet for the next 5 months. Probably five.
No, it'd be terrible. It'd be terrible.
It'd be,
I mean,
amazing. I'm not saying they're thinking that. I'm in the chat. Let me know what you think. Does this team view Peter Skoronski as a left tackle?
I don't know. That's a very interesting.
I don't think they do.
Question here,
but they might. So Diana Rossini is saying Titans offensive line coach Bill Callahan loves, all caps, J.C. Latham. It's his favorite player in this draft. I think it's incredibly hypocritical of the folks that have been talking up the offensive line guru, Bill Callahan, as God.
Teron just said, Rand Carthen said J.C. Latham will play left tackle to start.
Okay, so there we go. Everybody that told me I was wrong for thinking he has positional versatility, I want to tell you, like, crack a book, watch the tape. Like, obviously, you know, we could be proven wrong about him being a viable left tackle, but if Bill Callahan thinks that he can play left tackle, I'm sorry if I'm deferring to he can play left tackle. So,
yeah, I mean, I would say that, as Andrew just said here in the comments, back to his natural position. I totally, I'm coming around to you.
Everybody's saying, oh, the Titans still have a huge hole at left tackle. Like, if you'd listened to me once this draft cycle, you'd know that that's not necessarily the case, man.
So,
I'm not trying to be annoying about it, but like,
either way, the Titans now have fixed that left tackle problem. I think that you just heard from your GM. If you still want to be mad about Jace, the prospect that is J.C. Latham, you can, I guess. But from both Bill Callahan, who just said that he was the number one tackle prospect for him in this draft, mm-hmm. and Rand Carthen coming out of the gate right now and saying that J.C. Latham is going to play left tackle for the Titans, mm-hmm. you have to assume that J.C. Latham is a left tackle now. That's really all you can do.
He will be for the next year at the very, very least, right?
I would agree. You kind of has to be, right? All right. Woodrun says here,
hang on, I came on real quick. Can I? Yeah, can I?
No, there's no panic here.
If you've been following our show this draft season, you know that there's no panic involved with J.C. Latham. He was my tackle three. I said there was an argument for him to be tackle two. I think I said pre-draft that he is a top 10 caliber prospect and would be tackle one in any other class. That's the reality of J.C. Latham. And it's made clear now in the press conference from the Titans. I'm going to read some of the things that they said in this presser about J.C. Latham. It sounds like he was Bill Callahan's guy this entire time. He will start on the left side for the Titans. If folks are wondering, well, he played right side in college. Here's the reality. He played left tackle all 4 years in high school. When he went to Alabama, he did not get bumped to the right side out of necessity, out of the need to, because he couldn't hang at left tackle. They bumped him there because Evan Neal was playing left tackle. And did for the first year that he was there, and then went to the NFL draft, and now is playing for the Giants, and the NFL was a top five pick. He stayed at right tackle because that's where they started him at, and they went and they, you know, recruited a new left tackle. That's the way that it works in college. He's not incapable of playing the left side. He told the Titans, according to the press conference, that J.C. Latham feels left tackle is his natural position. He feels more at home on the left side. If the Titans brass, including Bill Callahan, thinks that's the case, and if J.C. Latham thinks that's the case, I don't know, like, I don't know who you need.
Apparently, Jimmy.
Who else do you need to say that to believe it?
That's a great rant, but apparently you said Bo Callahan.
Bill Callahan. You've ruined me with the stupid draft day movie. Okay.
Good.
Some other things. The Titans brass talked about how it's not super uncommon. This is from Bill Callahan. Brian Callahan. It's not super uncommon to make the switch from right tackle to left tackle. If he doesn't feel comfortable or look all right, we will move him right back to the right side. We need tackles, period. Something we have been saying ad nauseum on this show. They don't have a starting tackle on either side, so they're happy to have this guy and play him where he best fits. He has made it clear he feels most at home on the left side. The Titans agree he can play on the right side. Carthon says, if Latham doesn't pan out at left tackle, we have guys on the roster who we're comfortable with at left tackle.
Interesting. Interesting.
Are their initials PS? And are they former first-round picks? We'll get to that in a minute. Let's see what else. Brian Callahan saying, Bill Callahan reports that Latham is big, powerful, mobile, athletic, and has great hands. I don't know what I don't know what the downside is on that, but that's the upside there with your new tackle. Brian saying, just really strong, powerful, big, athletic human. There aren't a lot of guys that look like him on Earth, so we like that. Yeah, he'll start on the left side here. The Titans, according to Rand Carthon, got a lot of calls to move down from 7, but they felt like unless they heard an offer that was going to blow them away, they wanted to stay put because they knew a guy with the caliber of play that J.C. Latham presents was not going to be available if they moved down. Clearly, this was not a real. Like, I've seen people saying, "Well, they clearly drafted for need and not for talent." I don't think you can make that assumption considering the way that Rand Carthon has operated so far in his short GM career, seeming to draft, you know, play the dice, play the board, roll the dice, play the board. His BPA style of drafting. I think they had him as a top 10 caliber prospect in this class, just as I did coming into this draft cycle. And I you don't have to take, if you think, like, you seem to know he's talking about me watching the tape, you can think that all you want. Listen to these guys. Listen to the guy that you've been hyping up for months now as the best offensive line guru in the NFL, who declared this to be his guy, his quote, according to Diana Russini, favorite player in the draft. That's a really big deal.
Hey, welcome in to night 2 of the Hot Read Podcast Draft Show Live. I'm your host, Easton Freese, director of published content here at BroadwaySportsMedia.com. We're also brought to you by the 440 Podcast Network. Follow me on social media at Easton Freese, joined as always by producer JT. You can follow on social media at JT_Runke. JT, night 1 in the books, night 2 ahead of us. How are we feeling?
I'm feeling good. It feels good to be back on the casting couch for yet another,
right. Another 7 night. Seconds in, we're going to do that. Cool.
As Derek just said in the comments, casting couch okay. Is still here. But now we have pretty blue lights as well.
Just a little, just a splash of color in the
That's
background.
That's crazy.
We are about 10 minutes out from the Buffalo Bills. Almost said the Carolina Panthers. Buffalo Bills being on the clock at 33. Titans only 5 picks. If they stick at 38, will be between them and the beginning of this draft. So if they stick and pick, we'll know pretty soon what they are going to be going with. T'Vondre Sweat is the pick for the Titans at 38. They met with him the day after his DWI 3 weeks ago.
Sorry, Zach Lyons was
and,
right.
Zach and Stoney were right about him at 38.
Yep.
We obviously love T'Vondre this whole cycle and thought that he was worthy of a second round pick at 38. So pleased with this. He was here on the Titans best available board at the 7th spot that we had him up here. So love this pick. What it's most telling is people are going to hate this because they already thought he plays it too heavy of a weight. He has some character issues, and I don't think or some people perceive them as character issues. And he doesn't have 3-down versatility. I don't think any of those things are true, as demonstrated by taking him at 38. The Titans, who met with him.
Los Angeles coming up with Carolina here.
Okay, so let's not cut off Titans analysis.
I just had to point that out.
I know, but let's do the analysis here.
I know who that is, and I'm going to get really excited.
It's Spencer Rattler, right? It's got to be Spencer Rattler.
It's got to be.
Anyways. Which, so you know what? It doesn't lend to the Titans. I'll take my criticism back from you. You know why? Because if LA wanted to move up to 1 pick behind the Titans for Rattler, I'd imagine the opportunity was going to be there for them to trade to 38 with the Titans, which I think only tells you more about the fact that
they want this guy.
Right. They want this guy in the building. Now, so back to these points, right? The idea that he does not have 3-down versatility, as Zach Lyons said it best, it is fat shaming in 2024, and we won't have it. He was one of the highest producers of pressures of the quarterback. The sack numbers don't pop on the screen, but sacks are not nearly as sticky and predictive a metric as pressures are. I think off the top of my head, was it 30 pressures last year, the quarterback? In that range, I'll have to look it up here in a second. You can clarify this for me.
So T'Vondre Sweat, right? He had 20. So the production was interesting there. 2 sacks, 3 hits, 26 hurries for T'Vondre Sweat. He's a guy, as we get a look here inside the draft room.
They're very happy.
Yes, they are very happy here as they all start to come in and congratulate each other here.
Alex nails it right here. The Titans are going straight beef. They have added like 900 pounds worth of
bulk
to their, I mean, in the past 24 hours,
They have added two of the top, two of the top 10 biggest human beings in this draft, maybe top five guys. They are massive. And so T'Vondre Sweat created a lot of pressure in college, here's the most interesting thing about him, JT, is it's been pretty well documented. He came into last season at Texas playing at like 370, 375. In the championship games, at the end of the year, he was playing at like 380, 385. Yep. He managed to somehow gain weight throughout the draft process or throughout the season process, which is astonishing because like linemen in particular do not do that. You cut weight whether you want to or not as the season goes on. So he's going to play at that, you know, three bills, nearly four bills range. I think in the NFL, they may have him slimmed down a little bit, but like he's playing at 360 plus. He holds it well. If I remember correctly, he played a really high number of snaps per game despite being at that weight. It wasn't an issue of conditioning. He was on the field for like, I think it was 55 as a number, averaged 55 snaps a game. I'll double check that in a minute in his time at Texas. So I think that he has the ability to be a three down guy, be the front runner in a tandem with Jeffrey Simmons. Those two are going to be getting after the quarterback consistently on all three downs. And it's a massive, massive hole filled where on the defensive front, both interior and exterior, as you like to say, outterior. I didn't see them, you know, going into the season with what they had. You knew they were going to add some starting caliber players, and this is the first one they did in this draft.
The biggest thing for me is that we talk about how much Jeffrey Simmons matters on the field for the Titans, especially when you look at how many times he gets double teamed in a game. You can't do that anymore when you have this guy who's going to play at 360 pounds right next to Jeffrey Simmons. If anything, this is going to make as people are just trading.
Another trade. Holy cow.
Flying off Philadelphia comes up now.
It's DeGene. Dude, if they get Cooper and Quinion, it's so frustrating.
Anyways, as I was saying, Simmons now kind of has that weight off. By the way, did you see who the Rams picked?
No, who was it?
I have no idea.
I mean, I just assumed it was Rattler.
Wait, who is it? Is this Fisk?
Yeah, they did. Oh, it was for Fisk. Wow, we were wrong.
Okay.
Okay. Well, anyways,
Rams come up for Fisk.
Hey,
building that defensive line. Look,
they got their white Aaron Donald. This is the guy. Don't you worry about it.
Let's see though. Going back to T'Vondre Sweat here, as I was saying, Jeffrey Simmons now kind of the load is lightened on him. And when you're paying a guy like Jeffrey Simmons, you want to do everything in your power on that defensive line, even though you may have some trouble trying to get on the outside with guys like Harold Landry and Arden Key. Harold Landry's had a bounce back season last year. Arden Key still trying to prove that he can play all three downs instead of having to be more of a rotational piece. But with T'Vondre Sweat now in here, it opens up so many avenues for the Titans on the defensive line, and it allows Jeffrey Simmons to really have a bounce back year next year and kind of make that contract that he got worth every single penny.
Rappaport, here we go. Ian Rappaport pointing out, like I said, Tennessee was the first visit for T'Vondre Sweat after his DWI 3 weeks ago. He was upfront and honest answering all of their questions. There's no doubt that making this pick, that is telling you they were perfectly comfortable with that situation. And I'm sure at their press availability that's probably going on right now, and when we meet with him, he'll be upfront and honest about it, and we'll hash that out. But in terms of the play on the field, ignoring the off the field stuff, it's more speculative than anything. Man, he's such a good player, and I think that he is worthy of being picked here. I think the Titans got two borderline first-round caliber talents. I mean, I remember being back at the Senior Bowl talking about how both of these Texas defensive tackles could be first-round guys.
I want to can we go find his snap counts?
Because I'm seeing people talking about how he came in overweight, right. Can't play at the weight that they want him to. So I want that by game. So hang on.
Let's see. I can go to PFF
for you. Because in my research of him, I was pretty certain. Oh, I see. Okay, so I'm just dumb.
Yeah.
So, yeah, this year, 28, 38, 47, 29, 28, 41, 36, 35, 47, 43, 42, 40. So, like, just eyeballing it, averaging about 38. Was that like 38-ish snaps per game? And you got to remember, he's playing on Texas. I'd imagine a lot of these, like, 28.
The Great White Hope. Wow.
How did they get Quinion and Cooper?
That's crazy.
That's he. Can't, it's the me. It's the
he can't keep getting away with this.
Getting away with this. Oh man, that's crazy that they landed those two. Anyways, good for the Eagles, whatever, go Birds. I'd imagine some of these games where you had 29, 28 snaps were probably in blowout situations where the starters got yanked. Because in the back half of the year where they were playing the most important games, 36, 35, 47, 43, 42, 40, those are consistently strong numbers from a guy that, again, is carrying 375, 380 pounds of weight, carries it well, and is still a freaky athlete at that size. I like this pick a lot for them.
Final thing I'll say, or unless we want to continue the conversation here, Kenneth saying Rand's plan of attacking the trenches pretty successful so far. I would agree with
who
that.
Was it in Denard Wilson's presser a couple of weeks ago where he said, guys, I don't know if you know this, but in the NFL, you win in the trenches with big fellas up front. And that's what the Titans are taking to heart and doing with this draft so far, addressing the trench, which they desperately needed to. So is it sexy? No, to an average fan. But to somebody that recognizes, and I think a lot of you guys in the chat do, just how painfully handicapped they were consistently last year by the play in the trenches, this is very sexy, actually, because it's going to enable the rest of their secondary and skill position players on either side of the ball to do their job more effectively.
Yeah, I totally agree. Ian saying people were talking about Sweat going in the fourth or fifth is laughable. He came into the building the day after
he was
his
never
mistake.
Going in the fourth
Rand
or fifth.
Rand must have felt comfortable with any character concerns, like we already said here. Mm-hmm. If he comes in the day after and how important that's been to them in this pre-draft process, they honestly have to feel very, very confident in who he is going forward. And Name says, this I'll trust in them for every pick, really inspiring confidence, trust in them. I think we are. We have talked about the off-field concerns for him. You know, if they are still very much comfortable with it there by taking him at 38, then I think I'm good with it as well.
Nobody's saying that there aren't concerns. There are. We talked about it. We did our defensive top 10 defensive tackles in the class episode. Was it the day that it came out about him? I think it was, having a DWI. So while that is concerning, do not get me wrong, and the Saints are going with Kool-Aid McKinstry, a good ad for them for sure. If the team is comfortable with it, I think you have to defer to hearing them out, hearing him out. And listen, like, this is not the way you want to look at it, but in hindsight, we may be saying, wow, the Titans got a steal of a guy because of some character concerns, because of some concerns that he could carry that weight. We could look back and say, this guy would never have been available where he was for the Titans to take him at 38, if not for those things. That doesn't mean that you should be happy he has those things about him, but if you are willing to trust your team's evaluation, trust Rand Carthen and Brian Callahan saying, we met with him 36 hours after this happened, he explained it to us, we're still comfortable with him as a guy in a locker room where they are very clearly trying to build a certain type of culture, I think you have to defer to that.
Yeah, I totally agree here. Logan saying people make mistakes. He owned it, move forward and move on. And I think that's probably what we're going to hear in the press conference tomorrow as well. That'll be a big one, I think, for sure. If it is tomorrow or Monday.
With the non-first round picks, we won't meet with them in a presser like that. We'll meet them during OTAs coming up here in May.
I went back to my what I said about Tavondre Sweat in at the Senior Bowl, mm-hmm. and I said Tavondre Sweat on every rep at the Senior Bowl, and this is not going to show up well, but it's the
hold it up to the camera. Everybody knows this meme.
It's the gif of the kid in the Little Tykes running over his little brother.
Yeah,
in the Little Tykes. This is my come up for Tavondre Sweat, and I'm very confident that he can continue to do that at the next level. Jeffrey Simmons timing in on Twitter saying, oh man, let's go. Finally got another bull in the interior. Let's work, big dog. I feel so good about that pick, man. That's huge for them, I think.
Mm-hmm. Again, we are not saying that there weren't concerns. I'm just saying, based on the intentional way these two guys have gone about, Rand Carthen and Brian Callahan, the way that they have intentionally gone about, what are we freaking out about? Oh, I know what you're freaking about. Yeah, well, we'll talk about that in a minute. The way that they've been so intentional about it, ignore this guy. The way they've been so intentional about it is to me, that speaks loudly about what they think this guy's character is. And I'm sure they did. Oh, that's a look right there from that guy. They feel confident in this guy off the field. And again, if you take the off-field issues away, there are some very dumb, like, people are being dumb about this. If you think he's a two-down player, man, watch him operate out there. I really don't see how you can say that. But like, to me, JT, when people say that, it's because they see the weight, they see the athletic testing, and they say, okay, yeah, obviously, he's a run stuffing. He's a run plugger on the inside. He's gonna play nose tackle on occasion and just be the guy that, you know, he's gonna do the tier tart thing. No, man, this is not you're not drafting Tier Tart in the second round here, which, no, disrespect Tier Tart, but, like, you wouldn't want that caliber of guy in the second round. You'd want a guy that has a higher ceiling than that, and that's what Tavondre Sweat is. He's like Tier Tart on steroids. Like, he's going to be that level of run stuffer that Tart was, but he brings a completely different element as a pass rusher. He's a much bigger human being than, I think, right? How big was Tier Tart? Is Tier Tart. He's still with us.
yeah, he's still somewhere out there.
He's still off. Yeah, so yeah, 302. So yeah, he's Tier Tart plus a 50 or 60 pound dumbbell at his lightest. So
he's like Tier Tart, except, you know, when they put on that fat suit for, like, movies and stuff, he's got a fat suit on top of the Tier Tart.
So yes, well, like, you know what this screams to me, JT? I'm not saying the character concerns aren't concerning. But this, I have the same feeling right now that I felt last year on this night when the Titans go in draft. Why am I completely blanking on his name? The running back. Hello.
Tyjae?
Holy, yeah. Tyjae. I'm sorry, Tyjae. They go and draft Tyjae Spear in the third round on night two. And everybody and their brother, it's all they can talk about. It's the knee. The Titans drafted a guy with only one ACL. This is a terrible pick. You're completely missing the forest for the trees, don't you think? This idea that, well, because he's a party animal off the field, or, well, because on paper he looks like a guy that's only going to be a two-down runner. You're not actually watching the tape, looking at what this guy can do from an operational standpoint. It is different. He is a top defensive tackle in this class. He is worthy of a top 40 pick.
Yeah, and I think there are some things to his game, because I think there's some misconceptions here. Like Alex saying in the comments here, saying, why was Sweat's RAS so low, but everyone raves about his 40 time? We rave about his 40 time because he's a 360-pound man running a 40 that's probably rivals myself in Easton's 40s, and we are 200 mm-hmm. to 220-pound
fighter. 5'27", what he ran. 5'27".
He ran a 5'27", and he's three times the size of, like, both of us. Like, that's crazy. Skoronski versus Tavondre Sweat in camp. We thought about L'Jarius Sneed versus Calvin Ridley or DeAndre Hopkins. No, brother.
It's a movie.
I'm watching J.C. Latham.
Give me the big boys.
I'm watching J.C. Latham, yep. Peter Skoronski, and Lloyd Cushenberry against Jeffrey Simmons and Tavondre Sweat.
Yep.
That's what I'll be watching.
Yep, 100%. Yep.
That's a matchup for the... Right there,
yep.
For sure.
Yep, yep.
Jay Tool saying, this course of action shows some confidence in Burks and Phillips, I think, too. With Nuke gone next year, we've got a gaping hole at wide receiver if they don't hit. Fair, but I also think that next year's wide receiver class could be pretty good. You know, the kid out of Missouri, I think that's – I forget his name. And then the other
– cornerback?
No, the wide receiver out of Missouri.
This year?
Next year.
Oh, yeah, I forget. I don't know his name.
And then the Ohio State prospect next year. There's going to be options, you know. Next year as well. What was I gonna say? Yeah, no, but I think this is also was a very much a moment of a smokescreen for the Titans when they said there are some names that we've taken off the board because of character concerns. Maybe that is true, but if they said that outright and then still had Tavondre Sweat on their board after that press conference, then you have to feel pretty good about Tavondre Sweat and you know what he's going to do at the next level.
Yeah, all I can say is if you think he's a two-down player, stop watching Tavondre Sweat's weight in the weight category on his track record on his profile and start watching him move. Start watching the tape. Just search on Twitter Tavondre Sweat. Go to videos and just watch the guy operate in space. he's not moving like a guy that's 370. I promise you, he is a unique athlete, a one-of-one athlete in this draft. And your boy Max Melton goes where he belongs in the top 45. Max Melton, he is a, I think, a uniquely perfect complement for a Jeffrey Simmons in terms of skill set.
Mm-hmm.
Because, again, he is like Tyrae Tart in that way, that he is a space eater. In fact, he's an even bigger physical space eater presence up there than Tart was. And with Sweat, he's going to offer you that upside. While the Titans may not necessarily be the best team on the outside at the edge position right now, they are a team that is going to get after you from the inside, which that's the way we've seen the NFL kind of trending recently, is trying to attack the interior of offensive lines, and the Titans are going to be able to do that effectively.
In the press conference right now, Teron Davenport just put this video out that said, Rand Carthen said Jeffrey Simmons already called him to say thanks for getting help and asked for T'Vondre Sweat's number to call him.
Wait, say that one more time.
Rand Carthen said Jeffrey Simmons already called him to say thanks for getting him help on the inside line and asked for T'Vondre Sweat's phone number to call him. Do you think someone...
That's really funny. If you
don't like the pick, Jeffrey Simmons loves the pick. And I think you need to reevaluate what you're thinking.
Well, and you know what? That brings up another point, that the idea that Sweat may have some maturity issues are potentially very valid. Who better for him to come into the league and be mentored by, be shepherded by, than a Jeffrey Simmons? Jeffrey's going to be hands-on with him. Obviously, he's already wanting to be as involved in this kid's life as humanly possible. Jeffrey didn't come, like, he was not a super big character concern coming in, but I don't even know if you know this. Like, there were some character red flags with him when he was drafted. There's a reason he fell to where he fell. There was like an altercation in college with him potentially like putting his hands on a woman. It was a situation with a sibling that got out of control, and I think facts got misconstrued. Ultimately, he comes into the NFL. If you're questioning whether or not Jeffrey Simmons is a stand-up guy, you're not paying attention, obviously. And so he's got some unique perspective to say, I did some growing up. I'm a bona fide veteran in the NFL, not just in the way that I play, but in the way that I act, the way that I lead, the way that I interact with my community. I'm going to make it my life's mission to mentor this kid and keep him on the straight and narrow. So, like, I think that is a big part of him coming here and you having security in, I guess, having a level of comfortability with him being a part of this organization and not getting himself in trouble.
Jacob says, like he said, feels like a panic pick after Johnny Newton was gone.
I don't think so. I think, like, listening to talking one-on-one with guys like with TD and some folks that have better inside information than I do, I think this was their guy. I really do. I wouldn't be shocked if they had Sweat over Newton on their board. Genuinely, I would not.
I also want to talk one, like, we've been relatively complimentary, actually very complimentary of the Titans so far, because we like both their picks. I have one criticism of what they've done. And it's, I'm planning on asking both Rand Carthen and Brian Callahan. I understand you like the players you got. I understand they were high on your board. I understand that I agree that they're good players and good picks and values of their position. But based on a lot of consensus opinion, you could have moved back, gotten more capital, and still landed that guy. So how confident were you
that they were going to be gone?
That they were going to be gone. And if the answer is we had reason to believe they were going to be gone very soon, and you know whatever that reason is, we knew multiple teams were interested. We had teams trying to trade up for that player explicitly. Whatever it is, but like they need to have a reason, or else they are foregoing extra capital just to be certain of a guy. And that borders on falling in love with a player in the draft, when even if you're falling in love with a good player, a great player, a future Hall of Famer, even, you still don't fall in love in the draft. That's bad process to fall in love with a guy. You fall in like with a guy.
Yeah.
And if they've fallen in love with these guys and they were so unwilling to allow for a 5% chance they don't land the guy just to add significant extra capital in the draft, which they so desperately need, that's not the greatest process to me.
And you talk about, I don't know how many of those guys. No, I get it's a very, like, it's a very different situation. But if you're not falling in love with T'Vondre Sweat, why are you flying out to their hometown, checking every single box that you clearly could? Like, I don't think that.
I don't know if that's love. I mean, like, I get what you're saying. Maybe that's love. But that also may just be due diligence on the guy like that.
That's fair. Like, I don't think the Bengals are doing due diligence like that on a Jermaine Burton.
You don't think so?
I don't think so.
Because if they were, they wouldn't pick him.
Yeah.
You think it's just vibes and tape?
I think
vibes
so.
Vibes and tape on a Jermaine Burton.
I think that's the Cincinnati way. That's always been the Cincinnati way. Mike Brown is not allowing them to fly out to check a guy's hometown.
See, tape sometimes requires like Patreon subscriptions. And Mike Brown's not paying for those.
Let's
be honest.
Three Meal Wednesday. You think he's paying $25 a month for tape? Just Three Meal Wednesdays.
Yeah,
for them.
I don't know what to tell you.
Listen,
do you want tape or do you want Three Meal Wednesdays in Cincinnati? Got to make a pick here.
Jacob asked a really good question. He says, how different would we feel about the Titans if we re-signed Al Shaair? A lot, I think.
About the defense, I'd feel more comfortable with the position for sure. I don't know. Like, here's the thing. The Titans from a – like, when you look at it from the standpoint of their offseason, free agency, and the draft on the defensive side of the ball, I feel like he's – Rand Carthon, that is. I feel like he is making it clear that their plan with Denard Wilson is to – tip the scales mathematically on defense in the favor of the extremes. And what I mean by that is, like, you can defend the run with light boxes because you have two massive bodies up front in Jeffrey Simmons and Tavondre Sweat. You don't have to stack the box to defend the run. And then you've got three really, really, really solid corners on the outside. So you have an advantage in the run and the pass game on those two fronts at the extremes. It frees up guys like Kenneth Murray to do what he does best and get downhill in a hurry, right? It allows the safeties to play in the box and play aggressively, play downhill, not be too worried about guys getting over top of them necessarily. The scheme difference in terms of what you'll be allowed to do, like responsibly do, it's a big one because you have two things you didn't have previously. The ability to defend the run from light boxes with two massive interior bodies and the ability to cover man-to-man three deep on the outside without help. It frees up to the middle, the spine of your defense, your safeties and your linebackers to play downhill fast, physical, reactive, and aggressive.
Welcome in. It is day three of the NFL draft. I'm Zach Lyons, joined by Stoney Keeley, producer JT of the Hot Read Podcast, and of course,
hello,
Easton Freeze, the host of the Hot Read Podcast. And what's going on? What's everybody laughing at?
My green screen fell as we started.
Just already falling apart on the show.
Ellen, we were in the third setup, and I thought it was going to be fine, but then we come on, and it's.
We good?
Stoney, the big question is in the chat is who's more hungover, you or me? Where are you at on a 1 to 10 hangover scale?
I'm pretty hungover.
That's not a number, so you are really hungover.
I don't think I've been this hungover since the 2023 Senior Bowl.
Senior Bowl game hungover?
Yeah.
It's not Bode.
I would
say... Okay, well, Stoney wins then, because I am not that hungover. So
I would say 7. Wins. 1 to 10, I'm
hungover
a 7.
Of the four. The Tennessee Titans decision makers are obviously stacking the inbox.com. F subscribers, F words listener, for 40 sports listener, and hot read listeners, because they're doing pretty much everything we really have wanted since really the Senior Bowl, right? I mean...
Yeah.
You know, what's interesting, and, you know, J.C. Latham, I think everybody likes J.C. Latham. It's a really good pick. I would also say that looking at Tavondre Sweat, I know that Tavondre Sweat isn't everybody's cup of tea. And I've already got questions in the Substack chat for stackinginbox.com about, like, how can you call him a three-down player? He only played, like, 30 snaps a game. It was, like, close to 40. But that's a very... complicated answer, and that's something I will be writing about, what a three down player in college may or may not look like,
right?
But I am more using three down player to combat those that say he's a two down run stuffer, and that is the difference. So
it's a three down skill
set. Does it mean that he's going to play 90% of snaps? No. heck, Big Jeff only played, 68% of the snaps for, mm-hmm. for the defense and stuff. And Dexter Lawrence is around 62. So, like, with the way that colleges work, especially with blowouts as well, that's, looking at snaps per game probably doesn't make a lot of sense because, when you're blowing out Kansas 38-10, T'Vondre Sweat's probably not on the field, all throughout the whole game, and they're probably giving him and Byron Murphy rest. But I use it more for, I want to make sure that people know that there is pass rush upside. The people who think that there is no pass rush upside is what I'm really trying to combat, is that this guy is a two down run stuffer, when really the first two downs, you have to be able to stuff the run and
defend the pass,
stop the pass. And yeah, that's something that he does. And I know there's a very long winded answer, but I just want people to know Dane Brugler had him at number 33. Mm-hmm. And then once the DUI happened, that's when he dropped out to 129 out of the top 100.
Don't tell people that, though. It doesn't fit the narrative. Does not fit the narrative.
Yeah. Yeah, so just so everybody knows, and I try to preach this a lot, the DUI, the NFL does not care about DUIs for the most part. There's always going to be,
whether they should or
teams that were going to draft T'Vondre Sweat in the second round. I didn't think he was making out of the second round. There's always going to be that, because obviously the Tennessee Titans have done their due diligence, and I know I haven't let anybody else talk, and I'll apologize and I will shut up. But Easton, T'Vondre Sweat, J.C. Latham, big meaty men, how you feeling?
Everything's coming up us, gentlemen. I mean, like Zach said, it's been one of the more controversial drafts, I think, of any team in the league so far, just because both guys are pretty polarizing in the draft analyst community. I'm so glad that the four of us have it on detailed record for months now, that we kind of planted our flag on both of these guys as certified good players deserving of going in the top 10 and going on day two early, like T'Vondre Sweat did. With Sweat, you make a good point that it's the skill set more than it is the snap count. And I think the snap count thing is a lot of contextless box score scouting going on with him. Like, the idea that his snap count is, in the mid to low 30s is betrayed a little bit by the fact that, I don't know if y'all know, Texas was a pretty good team last year. In the beginning of the season, they played a couple games with the starters, didn't play a whole lot of snaps. So that's a part of that. When you look at the back half of his season, he was consistently playing significantly more snaps per game. And like you said, he has that skill set where he even if he's not out there the entirety of the game, he can play all three downs and be effective on all three downs because of the way that he gets pressure up the middle. And I think we talked a little bit about this, I think, at the bar off the record at the Senior Bowl. And it's been something that I've been mulling over this entire offseason, this idea that the NFL is kind of steering to, I think, the turning tides of the way that defenses are trying to attack offenses in a different way is getting pressure up the middle, attacking the interior of offensive lines. And when you have two guys like T'Vondre Sweat and Jeffrey Simmons, if that's your game plan, that signals to me you're all in on that style of attack, trying to change the math a little bit. I know our buddy Mike was talking about it last night. I think he's 100% right. The Titans defense seems to want to just be at a math advantage up front and at the corner position. They're trying to max out the extremes, right? Being able to defend the run with light boxes and cover three deep on the outside, allowing for the spine of your defense, your safeties, your linebackers, to play fast and physical and reactive and downhill. I think that's their recipe. And a guy like T'Vondre Sweat does a lot to help them in that regard. I would throw it to Stoney here, but it looks like he's fighting for his life over there. Stoney, can we speak, or do I need to do it?
Listen, he almost died at the... So
I'm good.
We went out and had a little mini powwow, had a little date night last
Hold
night.
Hold on a second. Yeah. Hold on a second. After,
yeah.
Can we tell the people, Zach, that we went to this fantastic, well put together, yes, awesome, like heartwarming event that 440 Sports, our kids, Sinkers, Lachlan Table all put on, and we drank all this bourbon, and then you and I at the end of the night were like, let's go to Dicey's, and then we each drank an entire pitcher of beer ourselves, yes, after this entire night of drinking bourbon. So that's why I'm struggling.
You almost died last night off of tater tots. I mean, yeah, he was struggling for his life. Javian Sanders comes off the board for the Panthers. So he was a faller that I wasn't quite prepared to be on the fourth round.
For me, it was less where he fell to and more the other tight ends that went before him.
Yeah,
Was Tip Ryman tight end off the board? Third for
the third.
Tip Ryman.
Yeah, your boy Sinnott was the second one off the board. So
love that.
But Stoney, while you were struggling for life, your thoughts on J.C. Latham or this idea of 700 plus pounds of just meat being drafted, and really I want to get into their comments because I think the Rand Carthon Ranahan press conference was amazing. I think it was elite. I think we got some really good insight into the process. It's like a lot of people want to say Isaiah Wilson for both of these prospects, but they're really the effort and evaluation and the investigation and all this stuff that they put into these players is way better than anything John Robinson did with Isaiah Wilson. So I feel very comfortable. Denver trades up, but Stoney, over 700 pounds of meat drafted to this team. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I'm thinking that comment that Brian Callahan made about looking good, getting off the bus, carries a lot more weight, no pun intended, than we originally thought. But it seems like a concerted effort to really get bigger, get stronger in the trenches, and build out from that. Like you're getting tone setters with these two picks. In addition to just filling needs, these are guys that are going to add quite a bit of beef up front on both sides of the ball. And I'm on board with it. I think this is not only, like I said, it's not only a couple of picks to fill needs, but it's a couple of picks that are really going to change the tone of the offensive and defensive line as well. And I like Jordan's comment, titties for days.
Titties for days. JT, you know, a lot of narratives. We were talking about it last night, floating around about Sweat, people challenging people to debates, putting people on moron alert. Sorry, intellectually challenged alert. Don't want to be too abrasive for Easton this early in the draft process.
Thank you.
But JT, what were your thoughts when you're scrolling through Twitter? Because you don't tweet a lot. You don't get into the sewers and yuck it
He's
up.
He's like you. He's just everybody. Lurking all the time, man.
He's just lurking.
I do
what
love
were your thoughts on all these narratives.
So my favorite thing is that I just love to I'm the guy in the corner that's going to eat the popcorn all the time and just kind of watch the chaos. I'll throw a stone and then kind of run back to my hole as Troy Franklin also comes off the board here for the Broncos. So his fall stops. You kind of see that those two guys who were the biggest fallers yesterday come off the board here. So their slide no longer now, which is so funny because now I just realize Bo Nix just gets to throw to Troy Franklin again. Like,
how about that?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
And they traded up for him, right? Like, yep. They traded up to get that guy. So their young quarterback has someone that he's going to be familiar with. That's a good move. I know that me and Stoney aren't the biggest Troy Franklin guys, but that is a smart sound strategy by the Denver Broncos.
And in the fourth round, man. Mm-hmm.
I start to become a Troy Franklin guy in the fourth round. That changes the math a little bit.
So the Sweat, you know, there are some people who were blindsided by this move, so to say, on
disaster
Twitter.
Disaster move, I've been told.
Apparently, it's a disaster move.
Clearly,
if you thought that you were blindsided by this move, you haven't been paying attention to what the Titans have done for the last 3 weeks or 4 weeks. Like, we've been reporting on it, and we've been talking about it.
Yeah.
About Tavondre Sweat since the Senior Bowl. This is a guy that they've been connected to for the longest time. Mm-hmm. And the fact that, you know, in the press conference last night, you know, we talked about this on our live stream. It is a little bit of like flirting with, did they fall in love with a Tavondre Sweat here, or was it simply doing due diligence? Because the fact that they meet with him the day after his DWI and then continue to learn about the guy, fly to his hometown, meet his family, understand the situation. I think that if they went through all of these steps and still drafted him where he was pretty much consensus 4 weeks ago, that checks all the boxes in my mind for me personally. It's also about the fit, I think, with both of these guys, right? Mm-hmm. I think when you look at maybe some national folks who have graded this draft. They're taking it on the name value alone. And obviously with Tennessee, they're not going to be the most plugged in when grading the Tennessee Titans ever. But I think you can't look at the pick just itself, but look at the situation that both of these guys are going into. This pick is not just for the player, but you're taking this player into a situation where both of them have basically the best support system ever. Like JC Latham getting to learn from Bill Callahan is a huge plus to getting him on top of the seventh pick. Getting a T'Vondre Sweat to work in that room with Jeffrey Simmons is maybe the biggest wild card there. You talk about, you know, the lack of production last year and how he's not a pass rusher. Two sacks last year, three quarterback hits, but 26 hurries last year, which is the biggest thing. Even if he isn't the biggest pass rusher, who's to say that this now takes the double team pressure off of a Jeffrey Simmons? You let this mountain of a man be the guy who's going to get the hurries, and let Jeffrey Simmons, who you paid almost $100 million to, go up and clean up and eat the quarterback. Like, right. I think this is a perfect 1-2 punch. It's scary for a lot of offensive lines coming up this season. I'm not really that mad at either of these picks. I love T'Vondre Sweat. JC Latham, I had my questions about could he move to the left side of the line, and then they came out 15 minutes after JC Latham got picked and said, yeah, he's going to play on the left side. Bill thinks he can play on the left side. And I said, okay, I'll shut up. Bill thinks he can play on the left side of the line. I'm going to stop talking because Bill knows a lot more than I do. I'm in love with both of these picks. I think it is great. It's a great force multiplier for this team.
And that's the thing, is like, everybody's like, well, they're very focused on the player and not his impact, not the ripple effect that these guys cause, right? Like, even JC Latham, now he's there. Not only is he going to move to the left side, but now you have someone that is big and massive and strong and has attitude next to Peter Skoronski, who lacks a little bit of power, who lacks a little bit of that killer instinct. No, and that's okay. I'm not, don't get me wrong or anything, right. But now
he's not nasty.
There's that ripple effect. And then you have Lloyd Cushenberry on the other side, but that also, you know, is protecting Will Levis. That helps, that protection helps get let the wide receivers run open a little bit longer or have more time to get open. And with T'Vondre Sweat, they're doing the opposite, and this is why I said last night, is that they're doing the opposite of what they did with Jarrell Casey. For years, I kept saying they need to find a guy next to Jarrell Casey. They need to get a premier guy, and they never really did until, like, Daquan Jones.
Like, right. It was too late.
And Daquan Jones is all right, right? And he wasn't a big multiplier, and then they lost, and then here comes Jeffrey Simmons, but they only get, like, a half a season together. And then the next time you turn around, they get Danico Autry, and Danico Autry is now gone, but you needed a guy on the line. Sebastian Joseph Day is a role player. I mean, we've seen he can be something, but we've seen over his whole career that consistently he's just kind of a role player. And T'Vondre Sweat, whether he just plays two downs or not, he is still going to impact this team. Not only Jeffrey Simmons, Harold Landry, Arden Key, the linebackers, then you have the cornerbacks. All these guys benefit from T'Vondre Sweat and Jeffrey and Big Jeff being on that line. And they have done so much work on T'Vondre Sweat. And I think that should let you know that they said in the press conference, they set expectations already at the meeting at the house in front of his family. They decided that, hey, we're a team that really loves T'Vondre Sweat. Here are our expectations for you. Here's our expectations for your family. Here's what we need to do to make sure that T'Vondre Sweat is making money, because Brian Callahan said specifically, there's a lot of ways to lose money, and being overweight is one of those ways. And that's right. What I told T'Vondre Sweat. So they have set expectations. And from
did you hear Rams called him last night? Did you hear the behind the scenes call?
No.
So I can't quote it exactly, but the way that he talked to him briefly on the phone sounded like he was alluding specifically to that kind of detailed conversation they've had about, if we draft you, here's what we expect from you exactly, and you better live up to it, because he essentially says, we're excited to have you. We want you to come in here. It's time to get in the room. Buckle down, be a good soldier, is essentially what he said. And so I think that there are some very firm, clear expectations that have been set. But can I say one thing about the parallel
this year's day two for the Titans to last year's day two. We had another instance of a guy that the four of us have been fans of since the Senior Bowl, watched him operate and said, this guy's a dog. And then the narrative on him on draft day, amplified by social media and people not actually watching the player, but looking at everything else about them, not on the field. You're focused on everything but what the guy actually does when he's playing football, right? With Tyjae Spears, it's, wow, the Titans drafted a round three running back who doesn't have an ACL. What a crazy, stupid decision. What a reach. The Titans, T'Vondre Sweat, they fell in love with the guy. They drafted him at 38. What a reach. He's a party animal. He's an overweight player that's not going to be on the field for three snaps. It's everything about actually everything but actually watching the guy play football. And if you just watched the guy play football, I think you'd realize you're missing the forest for the trees completely, because both are complete and utter dogs out there, man. And it's a shame that both of them have had to start their career with a media narrative more than actually a reflection of the football player that they are. And I see who the Titans picked here. I don't know if we want to wait or not, but let's just talk about it.
Yeah, throw it out there.
Okay, so Cedric Gray is who they went.
I love this.
I think it's a good pick. It's not the pick that I would have done.
They wanted a linebacker.
But it's a pick that makes sense, and I'm not surprised that maybe Cedric Gray is the top player on their board. I had him ranked a little bit lower, but it was more of a there's just other players that I think are better, but they obviously don't. But I'm in. You know, right now they're fixing needs, or they're fixing needs with really highly rated players. So Cedric Gray, in love. Wish it was Javon Baker, though. I really do.
Sure.
Yeah, I had Gray at 121 overall. He was my linebacker 8. But I would have gone Trotter, Eddie U, and McGee over Gray. But no real gripes with the pick, because he is really traitsy guy. Good athlete, good range. We watched him at the Senior Bowl and kind of felt like by the end of the week in the actual game itself, he was probably the best linebacker there that week. I don't know if that's a stretch or if you guys would agree with that, but it's a pick that fills a need with an athletic guy. I'm not going to complain about it.
Well, it's the coverage ability, right? That's the thing that, you know, it fills a massive need for a guy that could wear the green dot and can be reliable in coverage.
Well, scouts, I think, all agree Cedric Gray is a green dot, one of the few green dot caliber guys that could do it day one. That was the big thing on Go Long. I will say this, one of the lowest yards per reception allowed among the linebackers that went to the combine in a few that I pulled up, 7.2 yards per reception allowed, a forced incompletion rate of 8.2, which is about, you know, where you want to be. Run stop rate 10.4. It's one of the higher ones. I mean, he's not elite at anything, but he's really good. I would say this, though, he does allow, he got targeted a lot, but it's good that if he got targeted a lot, that he didn't allow high yards per reception, because he had the lowest snaps per target. They were targeting him at 7.4. Every 7.4 snaps, he was getting a target in coverage. So that means they were attacking him, but he made them pay for it. And that may just be the nature of how he played on the field. But I like it. It works. It's good value.
I think you're more excited about what it does for their defense. Right. You're more excited about what it does for their defense than the actual player himself. The hole that has been filled is one that takes a lot of anxiety out of trying to figure out what they're going to do defensively this year.
So real quick, I do want to just, so in our, not to, you know, toot our own horn here, are we 3 for 3 on our Easton, on our do and do not draft? Are we 3 for 3 on do draft players?
3 do draft players from our guys.
From us. Yes. Man, we're on fire.
We're on the record. They're cooking. Yeah.
I'll just, if you guys don't mind, I'm going to read what I wrote about him here. I said about Cedric Gray, in a weaker linebacker class, Cedric Gray is one of the few prospects with whom there is a lot to like. At 6'1 and 234 pounds, Gray is a consistent all-around player who doesn't make the flashiest of plays, but he's a sound tackler. He had a stellar 2022 season with 115 tackles, 80 tackles in 2023 with a 14.6% missed tackle rate. So there was a little bit of issue there this past season. But I think with his 4.64 speed, it gives him the lateral movement to excel in coverage and find his way to where the action is. This is the biggest thing that I just thought of as I was rereading this here. With Denard Wilson coming from the Ravens, what have they been preaching about the Ravens defense is the aggressiveness in trying to force turnovers. And that's something about that Ravens defense I've always really enjoyed. The biggest thing with Cedric Gray's game is that in 2023, he forced 11 turnovers during his time at UNC, including an interception. He also had 5 sacks in 2023. Like you said, there are some things that he can do in coverage to get better. But, you know, with that playmaking ability to force those turnovers, I really do like the pick here. I think that he can wear the green dot from day one. This is something that they've alluded to since the beginning of the offseason that, hey, there may be like we don't have to go out and get a guy because there may be some guys that in this draft class that we like that can do it from day one. And this is a guy that I think is going to play right alongside Kenneth Murray and be that green dot guy.
Yeah, and if you are a subscriber to Stacking the Inbox, you've probably already read this, but I did pull up my eval from our girthy draft guide. Gray clearly has the athletic traits to play. You don't have to watch him for too long to notice his range and physical tools. The speed and explosiveness shows up right away down in Mobile. He was sticky in coverage on running backs, which was something that those drills are designed for the offensive players. It's really difficult for the linebackers to hang in there and cover the running backs, cover the tight ends. So I was particularly impressed by that. His fluidity and range show up on the tape too, where he plays with fluid hip turn and the quick twitch it takes to navigate traffic, shed blocks, and play the run or pressure the quarterback, which I think is kind of an underrated component of this conversation, is that he could be in this defense under Denard Wilson, which we think if it is going to mimic the Ravens defense at all, is a very valuable piece to have. You know, I'm thinking about how they utilized Patrick Queen last year. So I like that component to Cedric Gray's game as well. He's athletic enough to sell the rush at the edge, sink his hips, and still quickly get back into coverage. So when you talk about what Mike McDonald did with the Ravens and what we presume Denard Wilson is going to do a little bit of, it's that disguising. Like, Cedric Gray has the athleticism to play up to the line of scrimmage and then drop back into coverage if they're basically bluffing on those alignments. His light frame does get him pushed back defending the run, but he's a scrappy tackler and forcefully storms the gate. Gray is a rangy linebacker that can cover the field from sideline to sideline.
Green dot Gray. Cedric Green. Just
Green dot
Cedric
Gray. Green
dot Gray.
Good stuff.
This is a good draft. I mean,
it is.
It's a really good draft. It may not be the most exciting draft. I mean, you're talking about an offensive line, a defensive line. But right. But I also don't think that any of these are reaching for need. It's more of the best player. I could see this being best player available.
Yeah.
So, and on their board. Now, it's not on the board that I tried to put together with them in mind, but it's just because, again, you know, I like Christian Mahogany more than most, and I figured that maybe they would put an offensive lineman up there. But I would say, yeah, there. I think, I guess you called it a taking your medicine draft, Easton, from Kenneth, and I kind of agree that it is just it's not exciting.
And well, here's the thing, John Robinson hollowed out this roster for 2 years, and you're at the point where you need meat and potatoes guys, and these are meat and potatoes guys they've been adding. It's the foundation upon which your roster needs to be built on. They are still in year one of a rebuild, and these are the kinds of guys you need to bring in. They're not the guys that are going to be getting massive second contracts necessarily, but they're going to be the foundation that you put the flashy stuff around, that you build around the next 3-4 years. And if you don't have those guys, like we saw the Titans the past 2 years, you become a stars and scrubs team. It doesn't exactly work when your stars aren't great, or they're aging, or they get hurt. It's a dangerous life to live, and so you've got to build out the meat a little bit.
In 3 years, we'll all be saying they should have took Javon Baker instead of Cedric Gray.
Wow.
And because that's how good Javon Baker will be. And it's not necessarily saying that Cedric Gray is going to be bad. It's just going to be saying that's how good Javon Baker is.
I just think that their hands are so tied right now. Like, adding another wide receiver to this room is so nice, but you have no linebackers. Like,
can I ask a question, man. Is it their hand? I mean, like, I'm not saying I think this, but I am thinking about thinking it. Is it fair to wonder if it's so much their hands being tied and more a reflection of how they perceive some of the returning receivers in that room? Like if they don't go receiver at all in this draft, is it fair to then say maybe they see Treylon Burks or Kyle Phillips as more serviceable than previously thought?
From what I've heard, yes. And I think that there's a good chance that they're going to give Treylon Burks and probably a more fair shot than what the previous coaching staff did, because I think that there was a bit of pettiness. From what I've heard, there's a bit of pettiness involved in that whole situation with Treylon Burks, and that's why you never saw him get targeted
with the pass regime.
Mm-hmm. The number one wide receiver that he is. Does that mean that what I'm saying is,
well, they made him a cardio kid.
I'm not putting faith in him.
I'm not surprised exactly. Yeah.
I'm not putting faith in him, but let's just say that the previous regime did not like how the events unfolded that led them to Treylon Burks. And Treylon Burks was not a previous regime guy. He was definitely a John Robinson guy, but I wouldn't call him a Mike Vrabel guy. And I think that showed up in how he was used, how he was ignored, because you can create plays and call plays and come up with game plans to get a wide receiver the ball. Now, listen, he didn't do much when the ball came to him, but how I was told how to view drops in these situations, would those drops have been as bad if he would have gotten to a rhythm throughout the whole season and gotten a lot more targets and catches? Because what we see is a guy that has like 36 catches and 4 drops, and that's way worse than a guy that has like 8 drops and a million, you know, targets. You get what I'm saying? It's just, you got to build on it. But again, no way am I. I don't know if the hands are tied as much as I do think sort of what Easton's saying, but I just think that these are the best players on their board. It just happens to coincide with a need at the time. Stoney, what are your thoughts?
Yes, absolutely. Sorry, I just saw that my guy Evan Williams is a 4th-round pick, so I'm feeling confident about my evaluation of him.
How about that?
You're telling me I shouldn't just think about thinking this. I should think it.
They traded up for Green Bay or for Evan Williams.
They did.
Yeah, yeah. So I think it does at least say, hey, we've got some time to work with what we have. We have Calvin Ridley to solve the immediate need to get a guy that can separate and is a matchup dude that you kind of move around to get open. And I think that the fans, and I'm guilty of this too, I'm not projecting, I'm a part of this too. We kind of were guilty of really leaning into this thing. Well, they're just going to move Treylon Burks back into the slot where he's going to be where he's going to have a better chance to succeed. And we kind of took Brian Callahan's comments when he didn't mention Treylon Burks among all of the other receivers he listed to play in the slot as like, oh, well, they're down on Treylon Burks. But I think that the idea all along was he's not going to be a slot. Like, we still want to see what we have in this guy, and they're going to give him the chance to get into a rhythm more and maybe, you know, get a second look outside. And I think that's probably the best thing to do. And I think if there's still upside with Treylon, like, we've seen him make plays at times. So I kind of feel like the way the draft is going right now does kind of tell us they don't view wide receiver as pressing of a need as the fan base does.
Can I say something about this Colts draft?
Sure.
You got Alec Pierce, Michael Pittman, and Josh Downs already. And then you're doubling down with Adonai Mitchell, Anthony Gould. How many wide receiver are you going for? Wide receiver wide? What was the plan here?
I know I said it as a bit, but I'm not joking. I legitimately think this was like a special teams to get him in that role on returning kicks and punts. I agree with that on Gould.
Yeah, I agree with that on Gould. I'm just thinking, like, is someone getting someone's? That's a lot of high round picks. If you didn't re-sign Michael Pittman, I feel like the Adonai Mitchell pick makes a little bit more sense. And I guess maybe they don't believe in Alec Pierce or something. I don't know. It seems like a weird wide receiver room.
Is Alec Pierce Indianapolis's Treylon Burks?
He might
be, but I don't know. I just think that, you know, I liked Alec Pierce, but maybe
I did too.
Wrong on Alec Pierce.
Ashton Doolin, get ready to learn UFL, buddy.
I've been going just team by team, looking at draft halls, and the Steelers draft hasn't been the sexiest, but I feel like they have three starting linemen they've found.
I do too, man. I kind of like that.
Troy Fontenot is a great first round pick. He'll play tackle. Zach Frazier can play center. Plug Mason McCormick in there at guard.
That Steelers draft is doing something to me, man.
They needed it. They needed that kind of draft.
I really like
somebody did a mock-up of what their team's going to look like this year. I don't know if y'all saw this already or not. That's basically what the Steelers are going to be. That's what they're going to be rocking.
I like Peyton Wilson. He was my favorite linebacker in this class too. And then Roman Wilson in the third feels like pretty good value to add to their receiving core. Mm-hmm. I kind of feel like Pittsburgh's knocking it out of the park this year.
Who isn't knocking it out of the park? Like, who has the worst? Okay.
The Atlanta Falcons. Well, Jacksonville Jaguars.
The Jags are, I was just looking at their class and I'm like, I don't know about that.
Are we letting the Texans off the hook a little bit? Let's look at the Texans draft.
They did
take Kamari Lassiter in the
so they got Kamari Lassiter in the second, Blake Fisher also in the second.
Oh, I hate that pick too.
Kalen Bullock in the third, Cade Stover in the fourth.
When your best pick draft is Kalen Bullock, that's a bad draft.
That's tough. I don't know.
I think I like the Kamari Lassiter pick. I don't like Blake Fisher at all. I called him popcorn because, you know, he's steady, reliable. You know what he is. You know what you're going to get. But, like, it's not – you can't do too much with it. You know, it's still just popcorn.
Right.
It's like butter.
Is it corn. Like the low-carb, 100-calorie popcorn from the grocery store? Or is it movie lover, butter lover from the movie?
No, it's not even that exciting. It's not – it's just, you know – standard issue. I don't particularly like Kalen Bullock. I think he's kind of a one-trick pony. And I think, looking at the Kamari Lassiter pick, obviously I'm not in the Texans organization. I don't know what they plan to do with him. But I feel like moving Kamari Lassiter inside to the nickel is probably a good strategy for them to kind of cover the inside. And I also feel like that's probably Kalen Bullock's best trait as a safety. I don't think he's a particularly physical presence. So you had him in the slot. So, like, now what are you just getting to inside defensive backs here? And then Cade Stover, I've already said, runs like he's running through a bog with a brick in his butt.
Titans draft Jarvis Brownlee Jr. There it is.
Did they
there
really?
Go.
Yep.
How about it?
Love that pick.
Hey,
my boy.
Hey, four hey, for four, Easton. Four let's four go. Four for four, baby. Let's go.
Huge. Jarvis Brownlee Jr. That's another visit. That's it another is. Visit off the list.
It is.
I love this pick so much, man. He is I've been saying it since January. He is such a Denard Wilson guy. He plays like a bigger body guy. The limitation, the reason why he's available here is because athletically there are limitations. Size-wise, there's limitations, but he's so tenacious. He's so aggressive. He works well in man coverage. Like you said, Stoney, he runs routes for receivers. He makes me feel so much more comfortable with the drop-off from the top three cornerbacks they have on this team to the next guy. Him bridging that gap is a big deal because you're going to have some of these guys get banged up. He's going to have to play some this season, and he's a significant upgrade over who they had.
I had him as a top 100 player. I had him at 94 on my big board. He was in my hidden gems class, if you're a subscriber. to stacking the inbox. He was my 14th cornerback in this class, and I'm trying to pull up my evaluation of him, but I jotted his name down so many times in this 60,000 word doc that it's taken me a minute. Okay, here we go. 5'10", 194, frame looks a little light, but he plays as if he's anything but light. I noticed how active he was with his hands at the line of scrimmage. The real eyebrow raiser for me was seeing him practically run routes for the receiver he was covering in practice multiple times. Wasn't just a one-time deal against a particular player. He was doing it every day. Getting to catch up on the tape, it accurately reflects that and then some. And that was the final straw for me when I put him into the Hidden Gems class. He seems to have a knack for undercutting a receiver at the break point, understanding who is trying to go where, locking in on a target, and forcing difficult throws when a receiver gets behind him. That was another trait that feels like very advanced cornerback play. He doesn't panic when he gets beat. Instead, he kind of shifts his alignment to force quarterbacks to throw over him and into a bucket ahead of the wide receiver, which you don't see a lot of college quarterbacks make. And that is a very endearing trait. The dude's a dog. He's a scrapper. He fights and he plays advanced cornerback.
What you just said, the last thing you said, I also wrote. I said, his attitude is pure dog. That's the best way I could describe him. I said the former Louisville Cardinal burst onto the scene at this year's Senior Bowl. At 5'10 and only 194 pounds, Brownlee projects as a nickel, most likely at the next level, but he plays with incredible ferocity. I mean, absolute dog. He aggressively tries to derail receivers from the jump, just like the Titans' newest corner, L'Jarius Sneed. His twitchy nature and 4.51 speed will allow him to keep up with just about any receiver, and that was evident on tape. The fact that he was just kind of absolutely crushing bigger wide receivers than him at the line of scrimmage is something you look exactly at a guy like L'Jarius Sneed. And I think that's something that's huge here. I said, however, that aggressiveness will land Brownlee in some trouble occasionally. He allowed 13 touchdowns during his time at Florida State and Louisville, and his man coverage grade in 2023 was a pedestrian 61.7, but he has a lot to refine in his game, but lightning in a bottle aggression is infectious, and putting him in a room with L'Jarius Sneed and Chidobe Awuzie can only do amazing things for him.
Hear, hear. Well said, JT. I will drink to that.
We're already back
I love
that. Is that the cure for the hangover?
Just
getting back to it.
Yeah.
All right.
I love the pick. I think it's smart. You don't want Trey Avery and Eric Garcia in the field, and you don't want Roger McCreary to have to go outside. Jarvis Brownlee, I do think that Jarvis Brownlee's maybe his best could be at a nickel corner, but I think he could play outside because of his physicality. But we talked about Denard Wilson and what he's looking for. Disciplined asshole with grit.
Yes.
That is exactly what Jarvis Brownlee Jr. is. And I love the pick. I mean, also because I kind of predicted that it was going to be the pick. But, Audric Estime went to the Denver Broncos. But,
cool.
If I get my, I think it makes sense. I don't know how Twitter's reacting right now because I'm not got that part of the screen up. I would assume there's going to be a lot of people that are mad that he got picked. Of course, this was, though, the good stats toxic trait guy. So we don't know what Jarvis Brownlee's toxic trait is yet. So that's going to be a big
thing.
Too aggressive. Is it the penalties?
Penalties.
I don't know.
Yeah.
It's the hand fighting for me. I think that fits it perfectly. So 4 for 4. Congrats, man. We're on a roll.
we're on one.
I love it. I like corners that mug people. I don't care about anything else. I just want someone that mugs somebody and gets up on their face. I feel really good about Jarvis Brownlee Jr. with Denard Wilson. I think that's a match made in heaven. And look, I think we're just going to be rolling through these picks now. Tommy Eichenberg went to Las Vegas, continuing.
Gross.
I thought they were going to draft Christian Jones Eichenberg, and put him
nice
at center.
Touch, by the way.
Yeah. but looks like we're going to start rolling here. They're just going to announce them, you know, now. No more announcing at the podium.
Good.
Man, Tommy Eichenberg, whew. If you need somebody to hit somebody, that has no speed whatsoever. There's zero chance of the offensive player eluding Tommy Eichenberg. He's just stationary, and you need somebody to hit a stationary player very hard. Tommy Eichenberg is your guy.
That's such an Antonio Pierce pick. Like that. Yeah. He saw that guy and he's like, I gotta have him. It's literally,
I don't know why this is cracking me up.
Are people mad online?
No, well, I'm sure they are. They're always mad. But apparently the A to Z sports thing, I guess, Prince's Hot Choice, Prince's Chickens, Tangier, Nashville. No, just Prince's Hot Choice just sounds funny. It's just a good play on the words. We got Titans select Jarvis Brownlee Jr. on Teron's tweet, and like underneath it's like Rand Carthon's burner is just like a bunch of thumbs down. I don't know.
Yeah, people are going to be mad.
Just my opinion, man. Starters were available at positions of needs. I don't know anybody that was going to be a starter that was available.
At
maybe Christian Mahogany and Christian Jones, you could make those arguments, but that's not a guarantee. Yeah.
And like any of the edge guys were going to be rotational.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's honestly, but it really is about the situation.
He's talking about Spencer Rattler, obviously.
I mean, do you guys consider, I know you do, JT, but Easton and Sony, do y'all consider a nickel type? Jarvis Brownlee, a nickel type, or do you think he could play outside?
I think he could play outside too. But I think he's got the right mentality that if you did want to like move him around a little bit and just see what you got, because maybe you don't quite need him week one, you have the luxury of kind of easing him in, kind of experimenting a little bit in training camp. I think it could work, but no, I'm cool with like bring him in to be an outside corner. A contingency plan for Snead and Awuzie right now, but a developmental guy that could eventually be a starter on down the road.
Yeah, I just said from a size perspective, especially, you know, he's kind of fits into that Max Melton style of build that you just, you know, like how much is he going to be able to win on the outside? But like I said, where Max is like super sticky, Jarvis wins on the outside with that absolute aggression and like what you want in a cornerback, you know, cornerback crazy mentality. He just have to be vicious and violent and aggressive. That's Jarvis to a T. And that's what you kind of saw at the Senior Bowl going up against some of those bigger guys like a Johnny Wilson and a Xavier Leggett and guys like that.
Here's some stuff
I just realized.
Go ahead.
John Robinson was never able to beat the Senior Bowl merchant allegations because he'd always go and then draft all senior bowlers. Rand Carthon realized if you just don't go, you can then draft all senior bowlers and no one will mention it.
True. Yep.
So here we go. Some strengths, weaknesses. This is from Dane Brugler's The Beast. NFL scouts rave about his ultra competitive and aggressive playing demeanor, looks to reroute receivers off the snap, and has better press strength and lateral burst than expected. Quick footed and can carry receivers downfield. Moves with twitch in his feet to quickly change directions or jump routes. Natural hand-eye coordination to make confident catches away from his body. Plays comfortable with his off-man cover skills. Has a quick trigger to pounce and close on ball carriers in front of him. Never backs down from blockers, but he can also give them the slip and fit up the run. Makes it a point to get in the head of a receivers and beat them up physically and mentally.
Dude, I shared that rep on Twitter of him just laying the wood to Johnny Wilson, who's like twice the size.
I gotta go find. I'm gonna go retweet that. I gotta find it
because he played on all punt coverages. Exactly like it. So he played on all punt coverages. Offers experience in the slot as a nickel. So he has experience in the slot as a nickel. Weaknesses: lacks desired size for the position. Trusts his ability to notice route clues and guess patterns, but NFL receivers might find success flipping his aggressive tendencies with bait tactics. Feisty play style leads to downfield contact and flags. Inconsistent ball tracking and finishing skills on the deep end. Can be inconsistent passing off receivers from zone. Never backs down from a battle. See his matchups with Florida State's Johnny Wilson, but bigger receivers in the NFL would be a different challenge. Missed 3 games during his senior season because of a nagging right foot injury. And the summary is, overall, Brownlee's aggressive nature will be a double-edged sword versus seasoned NFL athletes, but his movement skills and competitive tough, toughness will be attractive qualities for defensive coordinators. He has the right mentality to play special teams and compete for a starting nickel role early in his career. So, pretty interesting stuff.
I would agree.
He's fueled by his tough upbringing, which is also interesting. Another, I like guys with chips on their shoulders.
It's like Dewey Cox has to think about his entire life before he goes on stage.
And what's interesting here is that he prefers to play press so he can get his hands on receivers and throw off route timing. And they played a lot of zone over in Louisville, but I love that he prefers to play press. I think that's huge.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, and I agree with Colby McClure. Sounds like a guy you want with Denard, and I agree. I think that was one of our big takeaways when Denard Wilson was hired.
The Saints take Spencer Rattler.
Oh,
good
wow.
pick for them. Very good pick because they're in QB hell, and their only way out was to get the rookie.
Apologies. Continue.
But I think one of the things that we have been consistent on, at least between me and Stoney, is that Jarvis Brownlee Jr. is the Denard guy. Like, I think everything that Denard Wilson always says, I'm like, man, Jarvis Brownlee Jr. sure feels like it's that guy.
Yeah. And that's the reason, I mean, to be frank, that's the reason I dedicated one of the film studies I did this cycle to specifically Jarvis Brownlee Jr. because you see him in action and he looks like a guy that Denard Wilson is describing when he talks about dogs. But then you see they're sniffing around a little bit. And I think you and I both were kind of like, yeah, this is a guy that if he's there at the right spot, they're going to pounce on. And that's what happened here today. So like Easton, Zach and I are also clairvoyant and can see the future.
Yeah. I'm looking.
I think we're just the best at this.
I would agree. Hey,
that's the conclusion.
You're
gonna
hear me say anything, but I'd agree. So Lent Zierlein has him as a good backup with the potential to develop into a starter, a 6.13 grade, that's which is to kind of throw some context onto there. Believe 6.71 was J.C. Latham's score, so not too far back. So if you're getting someone that's a good backup with the potential to develop into a starter, that is what you're looking for in round five. And I haven't seen anyone ask for comps. I don't know of a good comp for Jarvis Brownlee.
I don't really do comps unless there's something that just jumps off the tape at me.
See if there are any on the internet I can find.
So I will say this. Zierlein says Brownlee could have teams targeting him on day three as a nickel defender with the potential to bump outside. So I think when you bring a guy like Brownlee in and you have Denard Wilson, you have Roger McCreary, you have Cheeto, you have L'Jarius Sneed, that's a guy that can learn from all these other players. Yes. And can if someone goes down, Brownlee Jr. is your fourth man up. And you need four cornerbacks. You just need it.
Yep. Well, and the interesting thing here too, JT, did you want to jump in? Go on ahead.
I was agreeing with him because that's okay. Exactly my sentiment.
Like they've talked about, or maybe we've talked about, I don't remember at this stage in the game. We've been going a while now. But talking about like the good teams get to a point where you're not drafting for need every year because you have guys in the pipeline that you're developing that can step into roles. And this feels like one of those picks where you're trying to get ahead of the curve on the cornerback position where you're getting Brownlee in here right away. And by the time they actually, hopefully, fingers crossed, need him, he'll be ready to go and they won't have another pressing need at cornerback on down the line. You can just kind of keep cycling through these guys. The example that I heard recently was like the Green Bay Packers when they were going through all those wide receivers with like Jordy Nelson and Devontae Adams and Greg Jennings and all those guys that stretch where you're just kind of loading up. That's what this kind of feels like to me too, is like just getting ahead at the cornerback position so that once, you know, life after Sneed and Awuzie is here, they've got a guy ready to go.
Jaquan Jackson, wide receiver.
Wow. I'm not surprised. I mentioned him earlier about Tyke Tolbert. That's a Tyke Tolbert pick.
He was my 28th ranked receiver, 158 overall on the board. sneaky sleeper prospect that may make his money in the NFL as an underneath yak guy who can plant his foot in the dirt and change direction with the best of them. In Mobile, Jackson was consistently hitting on a lot of the over the middle and underneath stuff with his buttery smooth route running and crisp breaks. He doesn't seem to slow down into them. I was surprised to see he didn't test very explosively at the combine, getting poor marks in the vertical and broad jump. However, the speed tests show that the talent is there. Jackson does look more like wiggle than pure speed, but he's a versatile chess piece that can be used on screens and reverses along with on kick and punt returns.
About to say the punt returner upside.
Tyjae's teammate is Jill Morris, yeah. Probably says here. With the punt returner upside, to what you just said, Stoney, I mean, 8th percentile height, 20th percentile weight, 82nd percentile 40-yard dash with a 1.55 10-yard split. So speed is the name of the game there for Jaquan Jackson. Logan asked for hand size. Not going to like this one either. 13th percentile with 8 7/8 hands.
Man. Well, is this the first one that I think we really missed on? I just didn't see coming.
I mean, we're in that range where it's random flavor, guys. So
ruin the weekend. We suck at this.
Yep. Yeah, we stink.
I would agree. Yep.
Whoops.
Shit.
Everything's growing. Everything. So apparently Andrew says Tyjae is with him at his draft party.
Oh, cool.
So do you guys, you knowing that Malik Washington was on the board here, does that?
I would have gone with Washington. I would have gone with Washington myself, but I like Jaquan Jackson, and I think he is going to be like for what they kind of needed in the receiving core.
Yeah.
I think Jaquan Jackson fits the bill, and I mean, he'll get a chance, and I think he's it's not like it's a bad pick. I'm not railing on it or anything. It's just not the guy I would have gone with.
Yeah, and like we were just saying, flavor of the draft here obviously has the connection to Tyjae Spears being a teammate at Tulane. Obviously, if it is true that he is the and there goes Malik Washington to the Miami Dolphins at 184. Perfect slot guy for Miami. That fits a great need for them.
Yeah.
This must be a guy that Tyjae, especially in the building, speaks very highly of. And definitely we heard Rand talk about, like, you hear from players who they want you to take. And obviously the Titans in the front office agreed with them on this one here.
Yeah.
James Foster just tweeted, I'm going to memorize every wide receiver that goes before Malik Washington. What are we doing here?
Jaquan Jackson from Kentley Platt says his RAS was 3.13. So,
ooh.
So when we saw Tyjae at the Senior Bowl, that's who he was there for.
Probably.
Yeah.
He was there for Jackson.
I cannot find what I read, but there Trent Tyke Tolbert was there at the Tulane Pro Day.
The Titans have
selected James Williams, safety from Miami.
No. No.
What? Do you not like this guy?
I mean, he's a linebacker, if that tells you anything.
He's a safety, I thought you just said.
He's a safety, but he's a linebacker, if that tells you anything.
2023, 67 tackles, 2 tackles for loss, 1 interception.
Oh, man.
30 career starts and 33 games played.
Let's see where I've got him. I didn't put him on my safety board. I think he's going to be a linebacker, which I don't know. Maybe.
Maybe they need a linebacker.
Man, that's something.
That sure is something. I mean, holy cow, 99th percentile height, weight, and wingspan. This guy is long.
Yeah, he's a big guy. I mean, he could be like, I don't know.
His mock draftable is like a conch shell.
Okay, so
he's very unathletic, but he's very big.
He's perfect. Go ahead.
I was just going to read my eval, so if you got a stray thought, get it in there.
Go ahead.
Williams is billed as a safety. Now I'm hearing myself.
It just recently started.
Williams is billed as a safety, but given his size, a move to linebacker might make sense for him. This man is 6'4", 231 pounds, for fuck's sake. It's also just the way he plays the game that makes me think he's a better fit as a hybrid linebacker. At the Senior Bowl, I noticed how naturally he spied on Sam Hartman, diagnosed he was going to tuck the ball and run, and he shot through the gap to tackle him. Pal, that's playing linebacker. Williams is always willing to lower his shoulder and deliver the boom, but his limitations in diagnosing plays and coverage, in addition to his frame, makes me think a move up to linebacker is his best shot at success in the NFL.
Yeah, he's not a run block. He's not a run stopper. 2.2% run stop rate is one of the lowest in the safety class, and I'm sure it's going to be even lower if I pull up his linebacker traits as well. But I mean, I will say his coverage is not bad. I mean, yards per reception, 10.5. He's got 14.8% missed tackles, which is not great. 2.11 coverage stops, so 2.1% coverage stop rate, which is pretty high. And then forced incompletion rate of 10%. So I mean, he's a guy that has, yeah, I would say very hybrid. I would say, is he a poor man's? Is he the poorest man's Kyle Hamilton? The poorest man's Kyle Hamilton.
He's a Justin Simmons type, is what he thinks.
I think James Williams is like third world country Kyle Hamilton.
He is interstate off ramp beggar Kyle Hamilton.
I will say this. So I put, when you told me that you think he's a linebacker, I put him into the Titans fit trait tool for linebackers, and he was the fifth highest linebacker rated. So, well, yeah, I think mainly because of his physical and athleticism. It's not because of his on the field traits. They don't really translate well to linebacker as far as the stats go, the data.
Hey, I also had James Williams as linebacker 18.
They're fine.
Linebacker.
He's dog.
Linebacker.
But he was a 6th to 7th round pick from Dane Brugler. So let's go. He's one of the guys that got a profile. So let's go talk about him. A dime backer. I like that term. That's a good term.
I reacted kind of harshly, but I kind of like get the vision for this pick.
Well, he's the poorest man's
third world Kyle Hamilton.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So honorable mention, all he has a big old write up on him. Holy crap, that's a big write up. It's just the personal stuff that's got big write up. But honorable mention, all ACC, led team in interceptions in 2021. Led team in forced fumbles in 2023. Missed a bowl game. He opted out. All right, so here we go. Strengths: tall, stretched out frame, outstanding length, light footed athlete with an explosive first step out of his transitions. Shows functional zone cover skills and can locate the ball as a hook/curl defender. Receivers are aware of his presence on crossing routes over the middle. Can carry tight ends across the field and up the seam. Length makes it tough for passers to layer the ball over him. Plays with a large tackling radius and relies on his long arms to help him corral open field runners. Aggressive striker. And goes for the thumping hit when it's available. Was a regular on punt return and punt coverage teams. Versatile experience and played multiple roles, two high, single high, and in the box. Started 30 games for the Hurricanes. Okay. Weaknesses: long striding speed, but struggles to close ground in man coverage or pursuit. Displays hip tightness when attempting to quickly change directions of space. Inconsistent read-react awareness from the post. Wild take-on skills with too much wasted movements when attempting to punch off blocks. Has a tough time calming his feet to break down and finish ball carriers in the open field. Finishing strength is average at best, and physical NFL runners will run through his arm tackles. Energetic play quickly becomes undisciplined. 17 penalties in his career, including 3 face masks and 9 personal fouls/unnecessary roughness flag. Played part of his sophomore season with a torn labrum in his left shoulder and had offseason surgery in 2022. Suffered a season-ending groin injury as a freshman, which required surgery. Combine medicals revealed scar tissue on his right groin, which sidelined him for his pro day. a three-year starter at Miami. Okay, so a three-year starter at Miami. Williams played a rover safety position in defensive coordinator Lance Guidry's scheme. One of the highest-ranked recruits out of high school 3 years ago, he played multiple hybrid roles for the Hurricanes over the years and showed steady improvement each season. With his long, stretched-out frame, Williams has the versatility to cover and be a force player versus the run. However, his game lacks discipline, polish, and he's often caught overrunning responsibilities against both run and pass. Overall, Williams is more of a tweener athlete than a seasoned football player, but he's a full throttle enforcer with a unique skill set that will intrigue several NFL defensive coordinators. He projects best in a robber slash cover three scheme and offers versatility in sub packages to blitz or match tight ends.
So as the Titans on their official post here have him listed as a linebacker. So
yeah,
that's, I was just sitting here thinking like, man, this is bad news for Otis Reese and Jack Gibbons day three of this draft.
No, this is great news for Jack Gibbons. He can go and find a job elsewhere.
He can he can play running back.
His RAS as a safety is a 4.6, but you change it to linebacker, it's a 7.4.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And he is, man, he is aggressive. Like, he fits the mentality that they say that they're looking for on defense. And you know, probably by most boards, a pretty good value here in the seventh round.
Jalen Harrell, edge out of Michigan.
I love the pick. Love the pick because here's why. It totally fits the Titans' fit system. So this is a good thing for me.
Screenshot that bad boy.
So Jalen Harrell right here. He was the third highest edge rusher, only behind Jared Verse and Adisa Isaac. He scored in these percent. So he scored 96.3 in physical traits out of 100, 93.4 in athletic traits, and 84 on the field. He had a score of 92.2 overall. Jalen Harrell is a fantastic pick. I like what I've seen from Jalen Harrell on tape. Let me pull up one thing.
Edge or a linebacker?
He's an edge. And so he has a pass rush win rate of 20.7. So that is fourth highest in this class. And his pass rushing productivity was a 10.1, which is one of the higher marks as well. An 88.2 if you like PFF grades, but TPS on true pass sets, that's one of the stable metrics. He had an 88.2 grade. His average depth of tackle was 0.5. which is really, really good when you're talking about that. When he was tackling someone, he was tackling them like almost immediately. The big concern is run stop. He's not a run stopper, and that's where he only had a 3% run stop rate. But if you're looking for an edge, I am all in some Jalen Harrell-Lussey. Harrell-Lussey.
Damn it.
Oh, my God.
Not the
edge rusher. That, I want to write that stat down, Zach. Pass rush win rate of 20.7.
Yes, it's 20.7. His pass rushing productivity, his PRP grade was 10.1. Okay, so give me 1 second. I'll filter this real quick. So that, since you're going to tweet it, please tag me.
Yeah, I already did.
20.7 is fourth best in the among the edge rushers that I have. So out of
That's the stat I wanted. Perfect.
Out of 31 edge rushers, he's the fourth highest pass rush win rate with 20.7 on the best defense in the entire NCAA.
I'm not sure. I mean, listen, in the past we've heard Brian Callahan talk about how in Cincinnati, they were constantly trying to draft guys that were playing in the college football playoff, guys from big schools that were successful, and he's, you know, fitting that bill.
I'll say this. So I don't know if it's a perfect comp, but if you wanted a better pedigree version of Jalix Hunt, I think it's Jalen Harrell. I look at their stats are pretty similar. And of course, Jalen Harrell has similar stats to a guy who played at Houston Christian. But Houston Christian, obviously, he dominated Houston Christian. So Jalen Harrell having stats either at the same or better than him at the Big Ten, in the big leagues, that's pretty damn good. But 20.7, 10.1 pass rushing productivity, which is 10th best, tied for 10th best. And his pass rushing productivity on true pass sets is 12.8. So it goes up a little bit more on the true pass sets. It's a little bit better. But yeah, like I said, the only real knock that you would have on him, the only thing he didn't score perfectly on in these on the field traits that I used was the run stop percentage, which is, you know, that they typically like a 7%, but now it's a 7.12.
Yeah, real quick, the Titans, 5 of their 7 picks, they drafted somebody whose name starts with J.
Oh.
So,
J team, big J team.
Big J I like team.
It. I would have preferred Gabriel Murphy, don't get me wrong, but I know that Stoney was not as high on Jalen Harrell, but I did tell him that he needed to watch it because of the Titans fit that he has. So I'll let Stoney talk about what he's seen. And then while he's doing that, I'll look up Jalen Harrell on
Googler. Probably not the edge rusher I would have taken, because I think he's got a long way to go in terms of like polish. But the athletic traits, I mean, he's a fantastic athlete, and that does show up on the tape. He's twitchy, kind of easy, natural for him to disengage from a block, pursue the play because of that quick explosiveness, short area quickness kind of deal. He's capable of selling an outside rush only to leap inside, shooting the inside gap when tackles give it to him. But I think he stops his feet quite a bit. I don't think he shows a consistent counter ability or a big, robust pass rush toolkit. And I think there's a lack of power in his game that where he's just kind of washed out of plays far too easily for me. I think he's a gamble, but could yield pretty good results if you've got a good coaching staff that can leverage his athleticism and kind of teach him more about how to rush the passer as a technician. So the basis being the athletic traits, it's good. And in the seventh round, I'm fine with it. It's just not the edge rusher I would have gone with.
So he's number 21 out of all the edge rushers that Dane Brugler talked about. So number 21 over that. So like he beat out guys like Khalid Duke, Braden McGregor, Miles Cole, Javonte Jean-Baptiste, you know, guys like that, Logan Lee, guys who went ahead of him. Brugler was higher on him. He led the team in sacks and tackles for loss. And this is, again, the best defense in the NCAA, which I think is very important to emphasize when you draft a Michigan player that was on defense. Strength, streamlined muscle tone with adequate length, screams off the edge with strong takeoff and arc speed. Creates movement by converting his initial momentum to power, forcing blockers on their heels. Can keep his rush alive with underneath counters. Efficient in the stunt game. Doesn't let chips deter his mission to the quarterback. Widens his radar versus the run and stays aware of his contained responsibilities on the edge. Was up to the task a few times. His coaches asked him to drop and smother the tight end. See the 2023 Washington tape. Described as the tone setter of the defense by Jim Harbaugh. So he is the tone setter. That's big. It earns respect from everyone in the program with his play personality. Added punt coverage to his special team resume in 2023. So that's interesting as well. His weaknesses has a tweener frame, a narrow lower body, and mediocre play strength, speed reliant, and blockers know what is coming. Average bender with hints of stiffness in his ankles and shoulders. Most of his pass rush production came unblocked or on cleanups. Harold Landry. Setting a hard edge will be much more challenging versus NFL size and power. Doesn't have the explosive strength in his hands to jolt and discard blockers once they get their hands on him. Not ready to drop and cover backs or tight ends at the pro level. A two-year starter at Michigan. Harold, this is the summary. A two-year starter at Michigan, Harrell lined up on the edge. 2- and 3-point stances in defensive coordinator Jesse Minter's 4-2-5 scheme, which is eerily similar to the Mike McDonald scheme, which is also similar to what Denard Wilson just came from in Baltimore. So just something to throw out there. It was part of a heavy rotation, averaged 31.6 defensive snaps per game in 2023. Oh, that's too little. Sorry, too little. That's what I've been told about Tavondre Sweat. Too little right there. After playing more off-ball while Aiden Hutchinson and David Ojabo were in Ann Arbor, he moved to edge rusher the last two seasons and led the nation's top-ranked defense in pressures. So he's got off-ball linebacker versatility that we need to keep that in mind. But he led the nation's top-ranked defense in pressures, 31, tackles for loss, 10, and sacks, 7.5 in 2023.
Wow, productive. Really productive.
Although a straight-line athlete, Harrell rushes with speed and determination. He gives blockers everything he has. He isn't built the way NFL teams prefer for an every-down player, so he will be the rotational behind Arden Key, who's also rotational. But he plays disciplined as the edge setter and prides himself on being 1 of 11. Overall, Harrell lacks fluidity and doesn't fool anyone with his rush plan, but he brings a ton of effort and purpose in all areas. He projects as a sub-package NFL rusher, similar in ways to 2021 Pittsburgh Steelers draft pick Quincy Roche. There's a lot to like about it, but that's a Michigan player. You know, yeah. Michigan players are always, there's a lot to like.